Bring a Trailer podcast.
Welcome back to the BAT podcast. This is Alex. I am a staffer here at the website. I am joined by Zach, who is our director of auction strategy. How are you, Zach?
52 podcasts in. Do you think people know that you work here or not? Or
I don't know. It's just a way of saying that I work here. I'm not just some random person.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Also joined by Howard Swig, head of auctions. How are you, Howard?
I am great, Alex. It's great to see you taking more of a leadership position in this podcast 2024. We're off to a good start.
Leader in the company, leader in the podcast, staffer for both. Staffer for the podcast, staffer for the company. And of course, Randy, co-founder, our president. Randy, how are you?
I'm good. I'm stoked to be here. Let's get rolling.
Awesome to have you three here in particular, because these are the three OGs. These are the guys who started the whole auction enterprise. So
four OGs. You're in there, Alex.
Come sure. I'm assuming the same persona I did last time that irritated you, where I pretend like I don't know who you are.
Nice callback.
We've been asked by some of our staffers to hear stories, war stories from you guys, or even just interesting anecdotes about the early days of Bring a Trailer. And since you three are here, I thought it might be fun to volley some of those at you guys. I thought where I'd start, because I actually don't quite know the answer to this one. I think I know some of it. Randy, I was curious how you first met Howard and how he ended up coming aboard to Bring a Trailer. First kind of staffer, really, in some ways, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to talk about that and get Howard's perspective, too. I don't know if we remember the same story or if they're totally separate universes, but
Rashomon.
So BAT starts in 2007, and it's sort of one-man show, and it's finding cars online. Auctions didn't come until 2014. Some people don't know that was 7 years later. My favorite story about Howard coming on board is that we couldn't tell him that auctions, we were paranoid to tell him that auctions were a thing. They were in development in the background, but we were just selling cars fixed price through 2011, 12, 13, that sort of time frame. And when we're interviewing Howard, he's like, yeah, so, you know, what's the opportunity here and what's going to happen? And we couldn't say that there were auctions, which were probably about 50 or 75% built in the background at that point. And we knew we wanted to go in that direction, but that was a very tightly held secret because we didn't know if it was going to work and we didn't know when it was going to be ready. But before that, yeah, obviously Howard came across the desk and expressed some interest in working for BAT. I feel like we might have posted the job on the website to say we needed some help because we were listing so many fixed price cars.
You definitely did, because I applied to that job. Did you apply to that job, Zach? The 2014 job or 2013 or whatever it was?
I mean, this is super early, right? This is Gentry and me had started the company. We had a couple of freelancers that were helping find stuff on eBay. You know, we tried to do some motorcycle thing. We were like experimenting and doing crazy stuff. But we had a long list of people listing fixed price cars we called BAT exclusives back then. And it was a viable business. I had been doing it for full time for 2.5 years. And we were looking to expand and we needed help. And so I think we posted it. I should dig that up. If things we post on the website tend to still be there.
It's probably is there.
So we could take a look if that's still there. We deleted that one when we got some applicants. But Howard and I knew of Howard and we had interacted a couple different times. I knew his older brother from some car rallies. And then Howard did a couple of those, maybe the same amount or maybe less than his brother did. And then obviously his dad was well known in car circles. And so I used to go to the California Melee Start at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco every springtime. And his dad would be on the mic. And so a lot of people knew who the Swig family.
We had you on the mic 1 year, if I recall.
That I think
07, 08.
Oh wow, that was before,
right?
Huh? Yeah. Was that early? Yeah. Keith Martin and I shared like microphone duties, walking down
out in front of the Fairmont, doing the little announcement, talking about the cars.
Howard's dad was very friendly to BAT and to me, and very encouraging and welcoming, and was like, BAT's the coolest thing ever, and why don't you come out here and talk about the cars? And I was like this random kid amongst all these Ferraris and stuff, you know, and I was like, oh, I don't know what you want me to say, but I'm happy to say it. So anyway, I did that. I was invited 1 year and
didn't get invited back.
Howard totally one and done on that career, but Howard was probably mulling around that year.
Footage of that somewhere. We got to surface that. Yeah.
That right?
And my dad did like BAT. I'm sure he sold like his Fiat 124s. Dude, I'm sure he was the guy, Randy, emailing you like 30 emails, one photo per email. I'm sure that was a lot of the user base back then, but you made it happen.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, there's some interactions. And then I somehow knew through talking to you at events or whatever that you were working in the car space after school and you were working up in Marin and helping with car leasing and different sorts of stuff. And you and your brother were in the car world. But then we started looking for people. And so his name jumped out kind of more than some of the other folks. And we had a conversation. I said, let's do lunch or whatever. And we started talking about BAT.
you wanted to get back to that Melee hosting gig.
Maybe it would give me another gig on the microphone, but here I am with on the podcast as one of four. I'll take that.
Yeah, no, I'd say that's accurate. I was kind of in the mix in the SF scene for cars. I went to Michigan for college. I worked for Car and Driver magazine as a road warrior, doing some of the testing, driving around Ann Arbor and whatever press car hadn't been taken by the senior staffers. They left it for the junior guys. So whatever I could muster.
I got to derail this a little bit. And what were some of the highlights of Car and Driver test cars in the fleet?
Oh, man. I mean, Hennessy CTSV wagon 2011.
Wow.
That was good. Some Raptors. I loved like just driving home in like the Q7 Prestige decked out, right? Running around 22-year-old thinking I was hot stuff.
And but, were your neighbors like, who is this kid rolling this Q7 TDI home? Different car.
Yeah, probably my friends probably thought I was a wacko, but they you know wanted the ride and all the latest and greatest. But yeah, no. Fast forward a few years, I was sitting at my sales desk job in Sausalito at the company I was working for, and scrolling the BAT homepage like all of you do all the time, and this job listing popped up, and I was a couple years into this kind of my first big boy job out of college after Car and Driver, and knew that probably wasn't a long-term solution for me. So I took a flyer on sending an email to Randy on this job posting. We had a few conversations and yeah, that turned into employment.
Was that email to bring a trailer at Hotmail or bring a trailer? Then we upgraded to bring a trailer at Gmail. And then we eventually upgraded to mail at bringatrailer.com. There were some pretty early days tech going on.
Early days. I was hunting around. I was actually interviewing with Shift Cars that Zach is very familiar with. He loves their online pricing tool and Instant Offer.
Well, it's hard to love now that they went bankrupt and no longer exist.
They were hot to trot. They made me a job offer. Randy and Gentry were kind enough to extend an offer to me, and I was kind of hemming and hawing. Is it BAT or Shift? And fortunately,
Shift. You played us off a Shift.
I totally played you off.
Yeah. You were like, well, you better pay me more or else I'm going to go work for this startup called Shift.
You were like, good, you should go do that. But yeah, fortunately, I think bet on the right horse in that race.
And you came in not knowing about auctions, not knowing that was on the horizon.
Correct. Yeah, they were still at what was then at the time the tail end of exclusive fixed price listings. So I think I did like the final 50 or 60.
The pre-auction product, Randy. The product.
Call that a product.
It is a product.
Like, it was an email inbox, but I guess it was a product.
I feel like you've told some stories to us about that.
Yeah, then we had a little downtime, and then July 2014, we launched the first week inaugural BAT auctions with the E30 M3, the Mustang, and the Stepnose.
And I know off and running. Randy talks about those all the time. I don't know if I've ever heard what that was like for you when that first started. Randy answers this in interviews all the time. Happy to have Randy talk about it too. But it was interesting. Those first couple auctions were pretty interesting.
You know, honestly,
right?
I was the young buck on the squad. Randy was doing most of the heavy lifting. I was just trying to, you know, make a good first impression and not screw up too bad and, you know, do as I was told and, you know, try to add value where I can. But
just describe what I'm trying to do today.
Yeah, no, the early auction days was definitely, I mean, it was a success in the sense that a lot of people tuned in and we got some good press and exposure. But the first couple months of auctions were, it was a grind to kind of figure out the formula, what we were doing. People forget we started the first week of customer cars, not at zero like we do now, but with basically at an opening reserve price. And we thought at the time that we could open at, you know, 30 grand for your Mustang and people would take the bidding from there. As it turns out, that didn't work very well and none of those cars sold. I think one of them sold. So we quickly went back to the drawing board and had the bright idea that we ought to just start at zero and have a lot more kind of natural price discovery, which was ultimately the right call and which is how we've operated since then. But yeah, Randy, some rocky roads there in the early months.
I remember sitting in Monterey, so this is August 2014, a month after we launched auctions, and that week failed right before Monterey.
Disaster.
I was having a sandwich at Eric's Deli Cafe in Monterey with my dad, being like, it doesn't work. Like, it didn't work.
Did you think that was the end? I mean, were you like, we may not be able to do auctions?
We took a week off because we were kind of retooling, and that was the week off, and I was like, like maybe that was a terrible idea. Like maybe nobody
back to the
wants
exclusive product.
Totally, totally. How do we pretend this didn't happen and go back and vividly remember that? And we just kind of drowned our sorrows in a turkey sandwich and root beer. And like that night, we're like, forget it. Let's just change it and do this and do something else.
Amazing.
And we did that. So,
what do you remember about that time, Howard?
Man, I remember my internet going out and going to the local Starbucks to write Bill Osterly, who was a former, rest in peace, former podcast guest, write his 68 Firebird 400 convertible listing, because we were, you know, five, six, seven auctions a week. Every auction was critical, right? It was 20% of the volume for the week, so you got to get them out. But all sorts of, yeah, I guess startup stories like that, people hustling to make it happen.
Amazing.
Starbucks on December 24th, firing off the Firebird 400 draft.
I love it. And at what point do you guys get to the volume where you're like, we need another person? Like, what is that? What's that look like? Where you're like, this is actually going to be a success.
A person like we need Howard or we need more next?
We need more, right?
Well, so, I mean, how long did we roll with auctions? We did three auctions a week for the first couple weeks, and then we had an off week, and then we did a few more of three a week, and then somehow we got it to five or eight a week. And then that sounds like kind of trivial, but that was a lot of wrangling because it was very manual. The photo galleries were all external to the website. The comms were super clunky and all in. There was nothing automated about it. So much of it was just like, how
no comms. There was no comms.
Yeah, all of it.
I'm trying to lead you guys down to the path of bringing young Zach on board. I'm curious how that happened and what the kind of impetus was for that.
No, we plugged along for maybe the better part of a year. And I think we were up to maybe 15 or 20 auctions a week. I remember because we were kind of plugging along at 10, 11. I went away for the weekend. Randy was always very good about, and in those days, like all of our kind of community and business messaging was just on the homepage through pretty simple posts. And we still do that today, but obviously we got a lot of better tools and emails going out now. But he was always great about, you know, making announcements and events out of things. And one of those was we're going to 15 auctions a week. And I came back on Monday morning and read this post, and we had never done 15 a week. We had maybe done 11. And I was, here we go. Randy's just pulled up on his phone some amazing ancient that's footage amazing. Of the old office.
That's day one auctions. That's day one amazing. Auctions with three cars going. That's Gentry and me.
It's your dad.
My dad's yep. there.
Remember that Zach Allen was a fixture in the early days.
Uncle Lane cruised
every Friday.
Every Friday.
Justin Smith was in the room for that. Who was a buddy of ours who helped us build the website and the structure of BAT auctions.
Zach, that's what it looked like when you and I started. Those four desks across the front. What do you remember about
that's
walking
incredible.
In? How did you find the job?
I like that Howard dressed up for day one. He's not in a.
Am I even in that pic?
He's dressed.
You're in that pic. You're cruising, and he's in a gray T-shirt similar to the one he's.
It's exactly the same.
And some Adidas and some jeans.
Yeah.
Zach, how did you come across the job? What was it like walking into that room when you first
started? I don't have a cool origin story like Howard. I wasn't like a figure in the Bay Area car world for years or anything like that. I was more just miserable and depressed and unsure if I wanted to be a lawyer or not, and applied on a whim of this posting, procrastinating at my law job.
Same thing as Howard. You're on the payroll for somebody else. You're scrolling the BAT front
page. Were you doing
page.
That at same work? As did, all of our audience?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Did you apply to BAT from your work, like 100%. Cubicle?
Yeah, undoubtedly.
I love that.
That's amazing. What was that? What was the first day like? What was it like walking into that room, being with those guys?
Day one was intimidating. I just remember interviewing and being like, oh man, even if this doesn't work out, I'm really glad I met those guys. And then I think it was maybe 2 or 3 months from my interview since I got an email back. So I just assumed, oh, that was really nice that I met those guys and I'll move on with my life. And go.
Those
to
are the comms Howard was talking about. You were part of that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Day one was intimidating. I remember not getting a door key for a while. You know, Randy's slow to trust, but once you enter into the circle, then you're all good. So yeah, I would knock every morning and have him let me in. And then the days were mostly Monday through Thursday. It would be like the only word said would be, I'm going to go get a sandwich. And then it was just frantic typing and clicking on MacBooks all facing
that's kind of true,
window.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And then
we just kind of ground it out. And then, yeah, that's right.
Then yep. Fridays were good hangs. Alan would come in and work on cars with you. Howard would be in a better mood or sometimes work from San Rafael. Yeah, and that was kind of the early days.
And it was pretty unglamorous, head down, just processing cars and customers and doing it with a pretty lean and mean team. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember how many auctions had happened? Like what lot number roughly you came in, Zach? Had there been 1,000 auctions yet?
No, I was right around between, I think, 400 and 500.
Amazing.
Yeah, there was some.
Now we do that in 4 days.
I think some DOCA issue. Totally. That may be a trigger warning to Randy and Howard that I walked into around week one.
Randy remembers that, I can tell.
More than the auctions on the site, I remember what vehicle we'd take to lunch when different people were hired.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Didn't we all jump in the green LS-powered Series Rover and drive over to the salami shop?
We did that, yeah, about a month in or so.
Oh, that was a month in. Okay. Yeah. That's a meaningful early.
Was that for the key? Was that the key conversation? And then you slid it across the table?
He may have been given full benefits at that
point. I always forget this, but yeah, day one, you were rolling that white A4 wagon.
Still.
What wheels were on that car?
It just had the S line. No, it had S line wheels on it. It was the cheapy car. And then I sourced off of eBay or something, some S line wheels for that car. So it made it look like an actual nice Audi, but it was like a super base Audi.
I mean, that was the last modern car that you drove up until 4 months ago.
Long time. Yeah, long time. That was a family car. I must have borrowed it that day or my cars were broken or something.
Then one time, I don't know what the milestone was, but we took an Uber XL to Perry's for lunch one day. And that was like, well, we've made it.
We're like Uber XL as well.
Spending.
I was actually really, really uncomfortable getting that Uber
I think you
XL.
Were, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, where'd everybody park? Okay, we'll meet there. They're like, no.
Did you do a milestone for lot 1000? I can't remember. I remember lot 2000 was that truck, I think, was the LS Rover, I think.
For sure. We got to look. I mean, the vet went as 3,000 or 1,000?
Your split window C2?
Split window was 1,000.
1,000. Okay. Something may have been 500.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like there were other milestones. We were trying to get rid of cars. Yeah.
I think that LS Rover was 2,000 and your gray short wheelbase 911 was 3,000.
No, I thought the Dino was 2,000.
Oh, maybe, no, the Dino's earlier because that was my first day, the day they sold the Dino.
Started,
that was lot 1,400 something. In May of 16.
That was your first day? That
first
car
day.
Was live?
Gentry drinking mezcal on the like FaceTime.
Zach and I driving that car, or Zach videoing and I driving that car?
Yeah, we made the vid going around Dolores Park.
Yes.
And that's who ended up buying it.
The guy saw it in Dolores Park and bought it.
So amazing.
Amazing.
Really, really cool stuff. Good segue there into another topic that people were asking about. Randy, you're talking about family cars and starter cars, which is first cars and cars that kind of got you interested in either in cars or the car that you wanted for your first car or the car that you actually had. Zach and I, when we started at Bring a Trailer, we both still owned our first cars, which is interesting. I sold mine on the site. I listed it in a BAT auction.
And you weren't 18 years old. You didn't just have this car for 2 years.
I got
you
it when I was,
had these cars for a long time.
I got mine when I was, it was Carmi, 1971 Carmagee. I got it when I was 13 years old, given to me by my uncle. It was had been in our family. My aunt, it was her car when she was a teenager. She got it new.
So you had that car for 20 years before
Over
BAT.
20 years, correct.
That's pretty sad.
And it sold too cheap, huh?
You always say that, Howard. Yeah. I hope my wife's not listening to this one. It was her birthday
that
yesterday. She doesn't listen to the podcast. Yes, yeah. Vic in Canada.
I think your hopes will come true, Alex.
Yeah, I think probably I'm safe. Happy birthday, sweetheart. But Zach, you also had your first car when you started
I still
here.
Had the 98 Honda Prelude Eucalyptus Green, which I ended up keeping for like 12 or 13 years.
Amazing.
But you never drove it to the office. That was already sort of a retired car.
At least one time, because I saw it.
It was
the old
stashed
office.
At your parents' house, right? You had a
no,
different
I,
car.
No, I kept it. There were a couple conversations in the early days where my Honda Prelude was the butt of some jokes, and then I was a little ashamed.
You were ashamed? Come on. Oh, man. We were jerks. Sorry, dude.
No, that, don't worry about
that
it.
That car was awesome.
And yeah, at the time, public transit was a little bit better mode. The office anyway. Transit. Yeah, I was rolling that car around.
Randy, I know I've heard you tell the story, but I can't remember. You had is not an FJ. You said you sold your first car before you were 16. You just mentioned that.
FJ out of the truck trader in Pleasanton, California. $5,500. The guy wouldn't bend on the price. My dad and I went over there.
You were how old?
74. I was 14.
14.
Summer when I was 14.
Paper out money, lemonade stand.
I had to contribute. I had to contribute $500 or something like that, and so I was like 74 red original Freeborn red paint hardtop, pretty stock white wagon wheels. FJ40 brought it to Saratoga where I grew up, parked it in the driveway, and I had to sit there and look at it and wait for the calendar days to peel off. And then there were cruisers and Broncos at the high school where my older sisters went. And my sister came home from high school one day and said, the dude with the green FJ40 is selling it. And my dad and I both were like, that was the one. That was the one. And he wanted a grand more. He wanted $6,500. And I said, Dad, I'll find a way to pay the $1,000. If we can get that one and sell the red one. And that one had a V8 in it and was lifted and was like the one.
Did you know you wanted an FJ40 or did you have the list of these are the cars I want that will satisfy my needs at 16?
I knew I wanted a truck. I mean, I would love to have had a fastback Mustang, but that was not destined to happen yet. And there was one of those at the high school too, which we eventually and later got. Like the high school parking lot was like the purchasing dream for me. Like I wanted all my sister's friends' cars. That's what I wanted. So yeah, they drove some other stuff, but no, I wanted a cruiser. I like CJs and I like cruisers, and I went cruiser direction.
So you found the 16-year-old kid in the parking lot, made him an offer?
No, so my sister knew who it was.
Oh, your sister was the broker?
Yeah, my sister knew who it was, and my dad, I don't know. But we met him once. We ended up dealing with his dad to do the deal. And I was there, and we hauled parts out of his shed in the backyard and put them in my dad's Aerostar minivan and hauled those home separate and all this crazy stuff. And but yeah, brokered the deal through the high school somehow. And ended up with a green FJ40 that I drove for the first 2 years of high school and loved that thing.
What'd you do with the red one?
The red one sold to he was a quarterback at Santa Clara University. He was the older brother of my sister's friend. This was all, it was like small town stuff, you know? Yeah. We were just like, he wanted it. And I remember he came to pick it up and he started it in my parents' driveway. And the water pump just started like hissing coolant all over my dad's driveway. And we just sat there and looked at it and he drove it away. We didn't like tell him to stop. We were just like, this car is sold.
Good luck, sir.
And we were just watching it and we were like, and he just drove away. And I think we talked to him later and he was like, oh, it was fine. We just topped it up. It was fine. I was like, okay, dude. But anyway, the red cruiser, I still look for that. Any red 74 FJ40 ever listed, Craigslist, eBay, BAT, anywhere, I'm like, is that the one? Can I figure out that was the one? Because I would love to have that one back.
Did the Ghia just fall into your lap or were you actively looking for those?
I wanted the first car I remember. I liked, Lamborghini Diablos and stuff. But the first car I remember really liking that I could realistically own is I saw a broke down. You'll like this, Randy, because I'm not really that much of a truck guy. It was a broken down Ford F-100 on the side of somebody's house, like about a 55. And I was like, man, that's a cool looking truck. And so that's what I dreamed about when I was like sixth grade.
With the great grill in it, with the V8 in the grill and all that.
All that.
Yeah, I love those.
Lowered kind of, this was mid 90s. And then I really wanted Reading Road and Track. I wanted a 318 Ti, which I still kind of have a little nostalgia for. Cool. Disliked. I'm attracted to cars that are disliked by other people. But when I first saw or first remember seeing a Karmann Ghia, I was like, whoa, dad, what is that? That is so pretty. I still think it's one of the prettiest cars of all time, a Karmann Ghia coupe. And he's like, your uncle's got a broken down one sitting in his driveway. So we went to Bakersfield over the Sierras. My dad brought one of his Porsche buddies who actually you featured one of his motor builds from Ridgecrest in early BAT days, like 2008, something like that. Tom Cuby, RIP. He was a racer in the PCA. We hauled him over the Sierras. He got this car that had been sitting in the driveway for 20 years, started up, and we drove it back. I was 13, and he gave it to me. I had to get a California ID
and I
card.
Gotta know, what car did you guys drive over to get it? Because your family always kept it.
Yeah, so. I was 13, so this would have been 96. I'm sure drove in our Euro van. We had a 5-speed maroon Euro van. My dad wanted the most base one you could get with the black bumpers and stuff, and he couldn't find that. So it was this one step up from the bottom trim. Put 400,000 miles on that thing.
And true to form, you kept up your love for unloved vehicles with your 912E purchase. So you're not lying.
Correct. That was also my father. 996 purchase. A lot of vehicles that are maybe mildly disliked. Howard, what about you? You grew up around cars. You want to talk about what your first car was?
I did. Maybe a little irony in the mix. A little known fact. I actually wasn't terribly interested in cars as a young kid. And I was very interested in getting my license and having the freedom of my own transportation. Sure. But in terms of what that was, I honestly could care less. I think it kind of annoyed my dad because he was such a big car guy and this and that. And he was kind of like, well, your budget's kind of $5,000 to $7,000, like a lot of options. Well, let's talk about it. I said, I don't really care. He's like, well, do you want 2 doors, 4 doors? Like, give me something. So we ended up with a 96 Subaru Impreza automatic wagon, which is probably an interesting choice. But then fast forward to later in high school, early college, I did some 24 Hours of Le Mans racing. I learned to drive stick on two cars, a Corolla FX16. Which I wish we still had because it was a really good one. And my brother had a 97 Audi A4. Honestly, great body style, aging so well.
Oh, man, they look great. Yes.
So I was able to figure out how to shift gears on those. And I went to college and my parents decided to buy me a brand new car. First time I've ever gone into a dealership, I picked up I don't know why we stuck with Subaru. I don't know if that was a coincidence or not, but a 07 Impreza base, non-WRX, 5-speed. I was in the Midwest and did the all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. And that was really the start of kind of my actual enthusiastic, hands-on enjoyment of cars and driving.
And that's the car you took across country up on that northern route. I think about that trip all the time.
Correct. That was the car. Now we did, 9 or 10 cross-country trips. I think I put 88,000 miles on that car in 4 years.
Amazing.
That was a good one.
Did you ever take it to a track or do spirited driving with it?
I did. Yeah, I did some track days in Michigan at Waterford Hills. For all our Michigan listeners out there, little track in suburban southeast Detroit. And Gingerman Raceway. So I was kind of wetting my whistle a little bit, figuring out how to drive around the track and heel toe downshift and being a pretend race car driver. So I mean, that was not a great heavy Impreza all wheel drive, just ripping the rubber off. And but it was great for me. I was in my skill level. I was just happy to be out there and driving around.
That's awesome.
07 Impreza is the car you put the most miles on total yourself, right?
That's probably right. Yeah.
What's yours, Alex?
Probably that 912E. I've probably put 110. Probably that car. I've put over 100,000 miles on it in 25 years.
Randy, car you've put the most mileage on yourself?
Oh, man. I'm terrible at keeping track of things like this.
What happened to your app? Know. You had that little app that you were
going to... I do, but all my cars are so low miles because I like the broken
too many
ones
of them.
Are down and like I'm driving with that one that runs. I mean, honestly, we put 44,000 on the expedition back and forth to Idaho. That may be actually the most I've ever driven a single car. I was super duper spoiled in my early job at BMW in that we would get to rotate out all these cars. You actually had to give it back at 10,000. So I got to crank through a ton of driving. I've driven a lot of miles, but I had a ton of 10,000 and 10,000 and 10,000, 10,000 firing through a different BMW product. So not a super glamorous answer there, but I've driven the few different FJs back and forth across the Rockies and LA and all over the place. So added some miles there.
Put over 100,000 miles on my S2000 too, Zach. That might be close.
I put 120,000 miles on the Prelude.
That's amazing.
And it's like ingrained in my brain in a way I wish it wasn't, because it's still sort of my reference point for cars that I'm driving today.
Is that what you wanted? How did you end up with that car? I'm not even sure. Were you seeking one out?
Of every like 90s bro car imaginable, like 300 ZXs, 3000 GTs, even Celica GTSs. Yeah, and then that car.
I would still like a Z32 300 ZX. I like those. You see the yellow one that was on the site recently, the twin turbo?
Yeah, the yellow is good. And I know you like yellow.
Yeah.
Your original black GT3, was it black?
Yeah.
When Zach came to work at Bring a Trailer, he had very recently been in a near fatal motorcycle accident, which is no joke. I mean, it was he came in and scars on his arms and all this, and got a little insurance settlement out of that, which I'm sure you wouldn't trade the accident for the insurance cash
immediately
going back.
Parked into a rapidly depreciating asset to pile miles on. Very
oh my gosh,
photo.
Look at that.
We got
youthful Zach.
2015
still so youthful.
Picks coming up with Zach on Randy's screen. But
the GT3 was the second car I ever owned, my Honda Prelude, and then I got a 2010 GT3.
So yeah, Zach walked out of the State Farm office with his insurance settlement check, and
people are like, Randy, what are you paying that guy? Like, can I work at BAG?
That's like, what I asked you. What is that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's a hell of a second car.
I was so
car.
Quiet. The mystery really added. You just thought I was working on something really important over there.
Well, you used to ride bar. I didn't know you had that car for 6 months. I worked with you for 6 months and became your friend, and I didn't know you had that. You played that one very close to the vest.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't like the projecting into the world, the sort of discrepancy between what we're doing at BAT and rolling.
But now you have full comfort with it. Now you've come around.
Yeah. Things are a little different with 700 cars live than it was back
then. Totally.
And Zach's always owned a GT3 since that day. Is that fair to say?
Went a little hiatus for a little bit, but missed it. Then I got the white one. Little identity crisis.
It's all part of it. It's part of owning a GT3 or maybe a Porsche in general.
It's part of being insecure and middle-aged.
Welcome. If you guys okay to keep going? We're a half hour in.
Alex, I'm loving you. You're a great MC, man. Yeah. I think you get the baton from now. I'm loving it.
Well, I like focusing on other people and I don't have to talk as much. Last time, Howard, you weren't here for this. We did a little BAT myth busting session with some kind of common questions, issues that come up from sellers, as suggested by our staffers. I volleyed those in a kind of awkward way to Randy and Zach. I'll try to do it better this time, but would love to throw some kind of common myths out there for you guys to either bust or just to talk about a little bit. Sound okay?
Let's go.
All right. Why don't I tee you up first?
I'm in the hot seat. There's
here we are.
No prep for this.
Well, here we're in January. No. We're coming in completely unprepared. So we've talked about this on the podcast before, but it comes up a lot and we're here in the season. We're in January. So I thought love to throw you kind of one of the most common myths we hear, which is that the winter is a terrible time to sell your car. We've had great results today and this week and over the last month. So do you want to talk about that a little bit and about maybe some of the things that are true or aren't so true about, you know, seasonality in terms of selling collector cars.
Yeah. Well, first I'd file that squarely under myth and or probably more superstition than anything. And we're sitting here in San Francisco. It's sunny and 60 degrees. So there's not too much seasonality going on here. You know, I don't think it's a mystery that some of the biggest car auctions forever have happened in January and February. You have Barrett Jackson, you got the big Kissimmee sale, you have Retromobile. So, and those have been going on for 30, 40 years. So people think of the spring and summer as the selling season when all the cars come to market before everyone goes home to hibernate for the winter. We've never found that to be the case. And obviously in a fully digital world, people are transacting 24/7, 365, and people sitting in winter climates where they got 6 feet of snow outside their front door might have a different impression of it. But we've had, honestly, some of our biggest results going back to the Lancia Stratos we sold on, I think, December 26, occur in kind of the December, Jan, Feb months. So at least from my experience and being around BAT for 10 years now, I would file that under MythBusters. But then again, you know, superstitions are, I don't mean that in a derogatory way. People think what they think, and I've had success in the past with various dates and times and seasons, so they can do what they want to do. But we're open 52 weeks a year, and that has never proven to be a bad thing.
And Zach, would you say the same is true of day of the week scheduling, or is that different? That's another thing we hear a lot. Like, oh, a car's got to sell on a Thursday to have a great result.
Or yeah, it's some people are adamant about particular days of the week, but the data is pretty clear. 7 days a week, web traffic, bidding, it's all pretty consistent. I mean, ultimately, too, it's what matters most is the car. So you can fixate on day of the week, time of year, but if you have a good car that's well presented, it's going to find its bid and sell well.
Yeah.
I think some people, you know when they have free time to shop and peruse online, and they assume that other people's calendars for their free time is the same as theirs, when in fact people are bidding and checking things out at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. I know for Randy back in the day, Randy got most of his BAT work done between midnight and 4 a.m.
Randy's checking out stuff right now. He's shopping cars.
Absolutely.
He's on Kissimmee. He's looking at M&M liveried NASCARs.
Absolutely. That stuff. Are you kidding? It's part of being on the podcast.
So, you know, you can't assume when or why or in what capacity people are checking things out and firing off bids and online purchases. So something to keep in mind.
No, it's totally true. I remember very vividly Christmas Eve, sometime after 2016, a buddy of mine that had the Mustang that I drove away from my wedding, which I've always followed very closely. And I kind of want to buy it back, but kind of don't.
The white fastback?
The white fastback came from the high school parking lot, mm-hmm. Got Shelbyized by my dad and I, driven for a bunch of years, and then sold. And that was resold on BAT, and it was sold on Christmas Eve.
Didn't the Road Webster owned that car, right?
No, Webster? It's similar to that car, but it's not different. Those guys' okay. car. Those guys had some other clone. This was a clone, but always in California. And it sold on, I sat there on Christmas Eve watching it, and some people are like, oh, it's suicide to sell near a holiday or whatever. And the car actually crushed it. And I was sitting there going, wow, look at that. And it was, I mean, that was even in the early days. And now the audience is no joke, 8 times that size. So, you know, yeah, there are ideas about, oh, Saturday morning at 10:56 is the best time. But I mean, it's really the car you bring, Zach. That's exactly right on that.
Totally. It's the car. And what we often have told folks over the years, especially before they were as convinced that this was a great way to sell your car using the Bring a Trailer online auction.
We still get some of the prehistoric eBay, right? I needed to end at 9 p.m. on a Sunday night when everyone's at home with the family and totally crowded around the desktop. And there's still people out there that think that that's the best time to go. And we've never ended auctions on Sunday nights. So yep. You got people that have been tuning in and still requesting the Sunday night end slot. Haven't been able to give that to anyone just yet.
They're always going to be out there, Howard. To Zach's point, the presentation matters so much, right? The way you present your car. Zach, you want to talk a little bit about kind of the value of presentation, maybe specifically in terms of how it relates to photos and videos and how important those are. That's one of the things I feel like our staff is telling sellers the most often.
I always think of it like, have you ever just had like a phenomenal meal and pulled out your iPhone to take a photo of it and then showed someone later and inevitably it looks disgusting? That's what a lot of people do with their cars and their photos. So if you do that with your iPhone and the photos don't look like it looks like in real life, you should probably engage a professional.
Yep.
We offer services for and make that easy.
Professional food shots look great.
Oh, that's
right. My food shots look 0 out of 10.
Yeah.
Exactly. I am sure there are people who are shooting BAT cars who also shoot food because it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
Yeah.
So yeah, much like the meal that should look appetizing, you know, trust your gut, use your best judgment. The presentation does everything as it does right. with food and restaurant. And I mean, that's what matters. It's what gets you excited.
Totally.
Like browsing through listings, clicks.
You want Randy to get excited about your car? You better have a good hero shot. You better have a good lead image when he's should be doing BAT work and he's scrolling auction listings instead. Zach, you talked earlier about how you and Randy shot that video for the Dino, whatever it was, 8 years ago.
Speaking of what not to do.
Well, but no, that was a lot of our listings in the early days didn't have videos. And that's really become almost obligatory. It's like a mandatory component now. So talk about that a little bit, about either the evolution of that or how important it's become or just what makes a good video.
What's important to show? I mean, it's so interesting just because like technology has rapidly evolved over the past decade, where 10 years ago, it wasn't the norm just to have 4K video in your pocket at any given time. And now shooting a walk around video is even easier than just shooting photos of the car. You just pull out your smartphone and click over to video and do that. So I don't know. I think I'm a little bit more of a weirdo in this sense, but I'm always like,
totally. I agree with that all the time.
People getting on it. Like that's what gets me excited. But even from a consumer confidence perspective, it's just nice to see it operating warm, making noises. It's never been easier.
So. You're a suction cup mic on the exhaust guy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Sometimes it's a little much when it's all like blown out, but
I like hearing from the inside of the car what it sounds like, too.
My YouTube feed is all just exhaust vids, 14-second clips.
Whistle tips.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I mean, with the quality of photo and video now and what's possible, like cars can come alive in a digital way like never before and are as cool as ever presented online. And hopefully we capture a lot of that in our listings. And it's funny to look back at the old BAT listings from 14-15, which is, for the most part, zero video, far fewer photos, right? And you look at those listings like, well, how did anyone bid on
it's
this
amazing.
Based on this, right? And at the time it was kind of industry leading, but you know, things have come a long way in 8, 9, 10 years.
It's a requirement now. I mean, even our photo service that we offer, we've added videos to that, right? Because it's so important, such a crucial part of success. I got a couple more for you guys, if that's okay. Randy, anything you want to add about photos or video? I mean, you've been around for 10 years for this whole ride.
I just love seeing what people have done to kind of take advantage of the strengths of the platform and how many people see it, right? Mm-hmm. There's some power sellers that like have become, I don't want to say household names, but kind of like well-known in the industry by their username. Several of them have started businesses in the name of their BAT username because they're somewhat famous by what they've done. And that comes from effort. It takes some effort to do it. 10 out of 10 listing on BAT. And some people do it routinely. It's like every time they step up to the plate, it's like triple over the fence, triple over the fence, triple over the fence. And it's like, wow, these guys are really good.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely fun to watch their interaction and their media production. And some of them, you know, either do it themselves or they and are very like they're the shutterbug, or they hire staff and craft a listing with a full on business doing it. So anyway, would we have ever guessed that? People ask all the time, right? Like what was the BAT dream and business model? Did you know this was going to happen? Which is the craziest question of all time, right? Like nobody knew where BAT would be now. But I think one of the most stimulating parts is hearing of the people who really figure out how to adopt it and take advantage of it and use it to the fullest for selling cars. And it works, right? 911R and his videos, like if he posts one without a video, people melt down because they want to see the video of the car. And kudos to him because he put effort into making a cool kind of video that people want.
Man, great summation, Randy. I don't know if we should keep going. That's like the full arc from the early BAT days to where we are today.
I wanted to know what we were shooting on in the Dino. Were you on a phone or did we have like a little handheld?
We had an office GoPro and I think you had just bought the mount, but we'd never used it.
GoPro stock price was peaking right around then too. So it was good.
We had an office GoPro like on a little handle. On a little handle GoPro that we gave you.
We may have had a suction cup mount, but we're like too afraid to mount it.
I didn't do that. Yeah, I would never do that.
And then I remember like kind of hanging out the window doing it. And then we did some roll bys where I was like on the corner with the GoPro in hand. You driving by
Vimeo videos, as I recall.
Vimeo, all on Vimeo, because for some reason we thought that was better than YouTube back then. But the GoPro, also a substantial investment on the BAT dime that I was like, whoa, are we going to spend $250?
Made me sandwiches for lunches and dinner BAT. For a few weeks.
BAT may not have had a credit
card. Can't take an XL to Perry's this time.
May have had to pay like petty cash for that instead of a BAT credit card. Anyway, early days and us being terrified.
Well, I don't know. Was the ROI worth it with the Dino sale, or was that the only time that we used it and we shouldn't have got the GoPro?
The Dino ripping around San Francisco was a fun memory.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we hint at it, but people maybe didn't see, but the person who bought it, their friend the buyer was in Texas. The person who bought it was, their friend was sitting in Dolores Park in the Mission in San Francisco and saw us drive it by, not knowing it was eventually going to be on an auction, and said, hey, you know what's cool?
Saw you guys making the video. Weren't you out making the videos,
right? You know what's
right?
cool is this red Dino ripping through San Francisco. And then it popped up on BET, and somehow this dude in Austin heard about it and then bought it and said, yeah, my buddy had told me you were filming a video about it. Anyway, so amazing. Totally crazy. Only other part about that video, last thing, I yielded to a person walking dogs across the street. Do you remember this?
I do.
And a person next to me, a random civilian in a Volvo or something, like almost ran over this person walking two dogs across.
Yeah, they blow into the crosswalk.
Across Dolores Street. And we were also the seller on that. And in the comment stream on that listing, they were like, you're such good people. You didn't run over the dogs or whatever. And it was like, I actually think it made people like the car better.
Yeah.
Because we were not like terrible, terrible people.
By the seller, not the car.
Totally. Yeah. So they were buying the...
Don't post a video on your listing of you blasting into a crosswalk.
In a Ferrari in San Francisco and running over dogs.
Well,
like
slow down.
That would not have
Dino,
been great.
Dino.
Sorry, Fiat. What? Fiat. Sorry, it's a Fiat. We had a V6 Fiat. But anyway, I remember both being with you, Zach, on that and the whole narrative about the friend in Texas and not running over the dogs, yielding to the dogs and getting extra bids. That's how you get bids on BET.
That's how you get bids.
I can't believe this video still works. It's still on the list.
Do you still have it? Oh my God, are you guys watching it? It's amazing. What's the lot number, Zach?
The lot number, you were correct. I was mistaken. 1443.
Okay. 1443.
1500. Dude, essentials back then, there's like six items in the essentials, five or six items.
We're not going to talk about old listings versus new. That's a topic for a different day. Happy to have a podcast episode on that topic.
Speaking of Ferraris and what are you watching, what are you reading? I actually saw the Ferrari movie.
Did you? I was going to ask you.
I thought it was, I love the car. They did a great job with the cars. Anyone who's into cars in that era and the Mille Miglia, I would highly recommend. You'll 100% enjoy the movie. The movie itself, they tried to capture the Enzo's racing ambitions and also his personal life. I think those should have been two different movies. I'm not a movie director, but the focus was more on the cars, and which is where it should have been. But just 335 Sports running around Italy and Taruffi and Deportago. They had a lot of big name actors that were playing a lot of the drivers. It was pretty good. I would recommend to folks out there if you haven't seen it.
I loved it. I'm a Michael Mann head or a Michael Mann apologist because some of his movies are weird, but I freaking loved it.
I haven't seen. So you're saying, sorry, I couldn't tell. You're saying there was enough car or there was too much arguing with Penelope Cruz?
No. there was a great amount of automotive.
Good amount of automotive.
Not too much.
I went in trying not to know about it too much, right? I've made that mistake with too many movies, especially ones that end up being maybe not universally beloved. And he made a really smart move that a lot of people don't do when they're doing biopics, which is focus on 1 year. It's all 57. Right. So it's like pretty contained. It's not young Enzo and old Enzo. It's just one period. And I thought Adam Driver was excellent. He shows Enzo for kind of what he was. It's not, you know, it's not an apologetic portrayal.
I found Penelope at home, pissed off at Driver, screaming at him. I was like, all right, I get the scene. I get we're trying to portray the personal life. Let's get to Brescia and the start of the Mille Miglia.
Let's get to Brescia. That should have been the name of the movie. That should have been the name of the movie.
Two Brescia mentions in a row on podcast. There you go, Randy. I'm glad you saw it. I think it's worth seeing in the theater too, because it's I saw it in the theater with my son. I thought
the Deportago.
Cool.
I mean, obviously, I had no idea that was a friend of mine who's not a car person.
No spoilers, Howard.
But I obviously knew like what was coming, it's not a spoiler. I mean, Deportago has this horrific accident, and how they portray that is pretty gnarly, and like. I guess that's all CGI, but I don't know if that's how it actually went down. I always thought of it as like a huge, like almost like Le Mans style scene with hundreds of people, but it was more in this little town. And it almost made it more like...
It's pretty harrowing, gruesome, to be totally honest.
But they did a killer job with that. Yeah.
It's the climax of the movie is the big crash, the last melee, the thing that ends it all, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
And he said there was something wrong with the tire on the pit stop in that little town and they blew it off.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not.
It was cool. They did it really well. And the cars, there's a little bit of CGI, but for the most part, it's real cars everywhere.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I was wondering that. I asked people, are there like real 335 Sports? Like,
they are.
I don't know how they did that.
They are real. They are actual metal cars. Like, they didn't CGI the cars, right? Yeah. Like, they're probably reps. Sure. It's, you know, Ford versus Ferrari.
There may be some static ones or something that they're real, but they're not going.
No. Yeah. But it was cool. I thought it was cool.
But they nailed the authenticity as far as like, as as far as I could tell.
And
like,
the
I
look
was killer.
So many Giulia sedans rolling around, being people being chauffeured. And
I'm looking
Giulias.
For tickets. Oh, dude, I'm looking for tickets right now.
Enzo rolls a first series TI
yep.
with the early
Correct.
Grill.
Get out.
Dude, you'll.
And the opening scene, I think, is it Peugeot 403?
Yes, I believe that's right.
Which I thought was, did Enzo drive a Peugeot?
I don't know. But Peugeot, every
one of the best things about all of BAT
is how Howard pronounces of Peugeot.
Peugeot Peugeot. It's always been my favorite.
Yeah. I think
and don't ever lose it. Don't ever change it. Stay right.
That needs to be the title of the episode. How do you say Peugeot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
But yeah, mega TI cameo.
Really?
That. Yeah.
What color? Light or dark?
Red.
Red one.
Yeah.
But there's other alphas in it. Like the cars and the look. I mean, that's what Michael Mann is so good about. It's just a very, like the look of it is, you know, you feel like you're there in the 50s Italy. It's fantastic.
Even though Dempsey rolls in, that still
Dempsey's
feels like
actually,
Italy.
I was worried about that. He's actually pretty good, I would say.
He plays Taruffi, I
yes,
think.
Correct. And they even change his hair. I was thinking about it this morning. They make his hair look like Taruffi's hair. The workshop that they recreated, I mean, it looks just like the photos of that 50s Ferrari workshop. And they've got, you know, they've got Grand Prix cars in bare metal there. There's a Grand Prix scene early on, which is interesting. There's a race and a testing session. With Grand Prix cars.
I was wondering about that, if that's how it actually, that guy just running around the track, Enzo's standing there.
But man, that
his
scene
time.
When they're in church and everyone's, all the men, because they're in Modena, all the men work for Ferrari and they all take out their stopwatches and they're listening for the car and like how fast it's going around the track. They know the current lap record. I mean, it's just really good scene setting, right? World building.
Some artistic liberties, but that's what we want to see.
Yeah.
I'm on Fandango right now.
Oh, take the family to see it this weekend, man. You guys will enjoy it.
We all went to Ford versus Ferrari together. We took the whole staff when we were a way smaller company.
I had dreams of trying to have our SF crowd go to this movie. In it. But anyway, I'd like to see it. You're not going to see the Lancia Audi one that's also out this week or whatever?
I don't
you
know.
Guys don't
that
know
one.
This?
I haven't heard of that.
This is a documentary okay.
anyway,
or this is
I don't know if this is podcast fodder. Everybody on the podcast is like, I know this already. But no, what is it, 83 season? What's the one that Clarkson did the big video about where it's.
But this is a doc?
Quattro versus 037 Martini livery. There's like a movie about that season, which seems very slim and it's
interesting. But wait, dramatized or it's a documentary about it?
No, it's dramatized.
What?
Isn't that bizarre?
How did I not know that?
Okay, Race for Glory.
Race
Audi
for Glory
versus Lancia.
Yes.
That sounds like it's going to go straight to Blu-ray, Zach.
It seems
Blu-ray. A theater release. This is not an American film. It can't be.
I don't know.
This is not for the
All
American. This is not for American consumption.
Moving on from movies. Appreciate you bringing that up, though. I want to go see that movie.
Yeah, it's good. It's definitely worth a theater visit. I'm glad you brought that up.
Good. Alex, do you still want to buy a Sprint Speciale, or have you cooled on that?
Oh, but kind of. Do you want a 996 GT3?
Oh, that could be actually interesting. That could actually work out.
How is that car? Are you driving that car around a little bit, the SS?
It's great. Yeah, it's got a Conrad engine and exhaust. It completed an event earlier this year.
Can we make the next podcast negotiations and transactions between 996 GT3s and Sprint Specialis and you two?
GT3s are going down. Sprint Specialis have kind of
they
kind
already
of
went down.
Are you guys level. Horse trading right now?
Kind
on
of
the podcast?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I really want yes. a SS. I would really. It's like. Very, very much shortlist.
And and Howard really wants a 996 GT3 engine.
I do. I need one.
That's true.
There's interesting things happening here. He really doesn't want an SS also, I think, is the other thing. Too many alphas.
I used to think SSs were cool and a few guys on the rallies ripped around in those. But yeah, I'm into the frumpy TI sedan, like a cheapskate Giulietta instead of those.
I just think they're cool looking up close. They're weird. You don't see them very often.
Seen one in the wild. It's like nothing else on the road.
Yes, correct.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, but Giulietta Sprint, just a sweet
I know.
Sprint.
I love those
like,
too.
Like the you know, dark one with TZ alloys.
Regular freaking GTV. I like the...
Unpopular opinion, yet again, my forte, that's a better looking car than an SS.
I like the sedans. I like the weird square sedan that came after your black car, Randy.
That's
I like all of them.
Okay,
like
we can sort it out. Your yes. GT3, maybe a little cash on top. We can we can make some moves.
A GT3 with a spare motor. All right, did we do it, guys? Is that it?
I think we're good for today.
Thank you all for being here. I hope we get to do many more of these in the near future. Thank you all for listening. If you have suggestions, anything you want to give us feedback on, podcast@bringatrailer.com is where you should go. Thanks, gentlemen. See you next time.